Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C Squared. Then I jumped on the bandwagon. I'm your host, Aaliyah, and this is Heavy Business, a podcast where we talk to music industry professionals and musicians and learn together about the music industry, marketing, and other tools that can help you promote the music you put so much effort into creating. Today's podcast is brought to you by the band Disconnected Souls. Emerging from beyond the shadows, Dissonant Whispers is the new music video from the eclectic cinematic metal outfit, Disconnected Souls. If you like fantasy, D&D, spooky vibes, and big atmospheric metal, you're gonna love it. Check out the video for Dissonant Whispers by Disconnected Souls on YouTube today.
Hello and welcome. This is Heavy Business. I'm Aaliyah.
And I'm Curtis.
And today we are here with Rich Castillo, the saxophone player for the Callous Dowboys and an artist manager. Welcome to the podcast, Rich. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Before we dive in, could you give a brief summary, other than what I just said, of what you do and who you are within the realms of heavy music?
Sure, yeah. I've been playing heavy music, since about 2011. Came back from my first year of college and immediately joined a band I was friends with here on Long Island. That went on for a little bit, and then we like dissolved and then resolved. A few of us reformed as a different band, and that band went on for a little bit until about 2017. And then that's actually right around the same time that the Dowboys started talking to me about playing saxophone.
So,
I've been with them since 2017, and then officially artists managing since November.
Perfect. How did you get started playing saxophone? I read that you didn't start with saxophone.
Yeah, so back in like fourth grade or third grade even, they come around, they have like the fifth graders in our school come and show all the kids. They put on a little concert and the different instruments kind of like get their own solo section and you get to hear what it sounds like, and then you can talk to the kids afterwards. And I immediately was like, I want to play saxophone. That's what I want to do. And then they gave me trumpet. So for fourth and
How rude.
It was my second choice, and I wasn't like totally bummed about it. I played it for the 2 years that I played it, and it was awesome. But then the summer before middle school, I was like, I want to switch. I still really want to play saxophone. So they let me switch, which was pretty cool. I took lessons over the summer. And then I've been playing ever since. And then that was actually right around the same time I started actually playing guitar too.
I have a question. So what possessed someone that's into metal, I assume you're into metal mainly, to play the saxophone, which is a very non-metal instrument?
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing it since way before I was into metal, before I even knew what metal was.
So fair.
There's that. It's just something that I've always loved. And then as I got older, it wasn't necessarily something that I was doing in heavy metal up until that second band that I was talking about. So that first band, that was a little more straight up metalcore. And then the second band was a progressive metalcore kind of deal. And that was when I kind of felt like, well, we call ourselves progressive. We're playing progressive music. Like, why don't I just try bringing my saxophone in, you know? And we found some spots to fit it in. And that was a little bit less metal, the parts that I was playing on saxophone. You know, it ended up being more of a softer, jazzier part than it would be metal, but I kind of got my journey started. You know, I started making some content, and then, you know, people would come in on tour and I'd meet them, they'd see what I'm doing and then ask me to play, you know. So that was my first like outside of my own band kind of experience was with this band called Trees on Mars from South Carolina. And they met my friends Cryptodeer on tour. And when they were coming up to Long Island, I set up the show on Long Island in the city, got to meet them. And then a little while later, just out of the blue, they hit me up and they were like, hey, we have this part that we think a sax would work really well over. Do you want to throw a solo on there? And I was like, sure. And it was the same kind of deal. It was more laid back, more where you would think a sax would go. But that really started to open the doors. And that's how even the Dowboys even noticed me. Same kind of deal. The Cryptodeer met Dowboys on tour. me and Carson, the singer, we just started interacting on Twitter because of that. And then a little while later, they were like, hey, the guy we usually go to for sax is ghosting us. Do you want to do this? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And ended up being the two songs that I did on Die on Mars. So that was my first like actual heavy like kind of thing that I played on saxophone. It was an adjustment for sure. Yeah.
And now rich and famous.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go there.
We'll go with that.
Rich, yeah. But only because by default.
Only by name. So you started off as like kind of a session guy for the Callous Cowboys, or
yeah, I guess yeah.
How did you sort of, what was that journey like? Because now you're more of a go-to for them. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, that's the first thing ended up being Die on Mars, the couple little spots that I'm on. And then not too long after, the same thing, they hit me up again. Hey, we're writing for the next thing. I have a couple spots that you would be, it would be really cool for you to be on. Do you want to do this? And I was like, yeah, sure, absolutely. And I even remember that at that point they were like, oh, you know, we'll pay you for your time, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'm having a good time. Don't worry. Like, this is fun for me. You know, like at the time, I didn't even have a band of my own, you know, so I wasn't like, it wasn't like I was crazy busy or anything. So I was like, don't worry about that. Like, you know, use the money to get me in a studio or something instead, you know? And then, yeah, a little while later after that, they were like, hey, do you want to just be in the band now? Like, we want to keep having you on our stuff. We really like you. And I got to meet them once or twice before that. So yeah, we knew we gelled and yeah, just
nice.
officially got asked to join the band.
Awesome. Now, you are probably, I mean, there's probably one other, but not very many other saxophone players in heavy music.
I know of so, three.
You know of three. So.
I know of three, including him.
So I imagine, you know, if a metal band decides they want to have a saxophone part, that, you know, you might be their first pick. And I saw in your link tree, you have like a contact form for people to reach out to you if they want a saxophone player. Mm-hmm. So how do you sort of decide who you actually want to work with? How do you filter that?
Well, I mean, luckily, I mean, right now it's not like I'm getting flooded or anything, you know, so, I'll just do it at this
Fair.
Point, you know? Yeah. You know, like it's really not that big a deal.
Well, what is your ideal sort of, if you had to pick an ideal scenario to collaborate with somebody, what would that be?
You mean like just like a dream band to collaborate with?
That almost, sounds interesting.
I guess,
yeah.
You know? I mean, yeah. I mean, I would love to work with a band like Between the Buried and Me or Dillinger Escape Plan, like two of my bigger influences, you know. But it's, I think, to answer like the question earlier, like if I were to be bogged down and not want to take every opportunity that comes my way, it would just be vetting, you know, like seeing what's already out there, who they know, if I know anyone mutual, you know, if I can be like, hey, who do you think, what do you think of this guy? What do you think of this band? You know, should I spend my time doing this? And listening to the track that they sent me, you know, obviously, first of all, if I listen to it and I'm like, I don't even like this and I don't have time for this, I'm just not going to do it, you know? So it is unfortunate a little bit for, unfortunately for other people, a little bit of a taste thing. But you know, it's not to say that I wouldn't be open to at least trying anything, you know? I think that's kind of what got me here in the first place, just being open to trying new things. I think that's pretty huge. Just being willing to say yes, you know, not saying that you need to bog yourself down and be crazy busy all the time and say yes to everything, but like just be willing, you know, at least give it a shot. If you end up not liking it, and then you know for the future, you know, like maybe next time a band like this asks me to do this kind of thing, I'll pass, you know, but at least you gave it the shot. And that's what I did with that band Trees on Mars, you know, and not, I mean, I loved their music, but it was the first time I'd really done something like that. The other, like when I worked with my band, it was more written. And I grew up playing classical saxophone. So I didn't know how to improvise basically at all before I got asked to do that. You know, it was all just written music, reading it, playing it back exactly the way that it says, you know? So just like busting out a solo was not something that I was used to at all. But I got over it. Yeah, that's got me where I am now, you know? So
how did you get over that? Like, how did you learn how to improvise?
I didn't for that. I just kind of got over that mentally of like, okay, it's okay that you don't know this. You're going to do it anyway. And just get it out there. And then I ended up learning that stuff afterwards. So I improvised a little bit on that solo. I did the first like two cycles through are written. I mean, I improvised to get there, but I wrote them out. And then the last like cycle as the song fades out is all improv'd. But yeah, I had to get over it mentally more than anything of like it being daunting that I had never done something like this before. And once I got over that, I was able to do the first thing. But then after that, it's like, okay, like if this is something that I'm going to be doing, I need to go figure out how to do this, you know? So after that, I took some lessons in jazz guitar actually for a few years, which helped a lot with the saxophone, just because it laid everything out for me real easy. And then I was able to just practice that kind of stuff on saxophone. And then after that, I've been with this thing called Sax School Online. So it's kind of like a pay yearly, and then they have tons and tons of classes and lessons. I can go at my own pace, you know, like that was the thing I found with the private lessons. It's like, this guy's coming back in 2 days and I didn't have enough time to really practice this week, and I'm going to pay him another X amount and feel like what the hell just happened. So I was like, I found that and I was like, this is cool. And I was able to learn at my own pace. And yeah, I feel I'm not going to go to a jazz jam anytime soon, but I feel a lot better about it now.
I have a follow-up question just from earlier though. So, you joined the Dow Boys, it was 2 years or 1 year ago, right?
Officially, yeah. I guess that'd be like 2020.
So I just wanted to clarify, you were there before the signing with the major label, right?
I joined the band officially right around the same time.
My follow up question is not going to work, so I'm going to change my follow up question then. So how do you think it kind of the experience is from being in like a band with all this kind of attention to, you know, when not having that attention, if that makes sense? Like, it's kind of like you're going from like independent to something major, like Monarch Heavy type thing.
It was definitely pretty crazy to watch, you know, like even just the Die on Mars hype. I don't know what you want to call it when everything was going on then. Even that was crazy, you know, like a DIY release, and to watch it blow up like that was wild. And then I guess it almost made sense at that point, I think, to start looking for a partnership, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
I think that kind of is exactly the experience you want on the way to looking for something like that, you know, like having that buzz, building that community, watching people love it and the shows get bigger and bigger. And then you're ready to put something else out, you know, put the next step out, and working with someone who's got, you know, the resources to make it what it was when Celebrity Therapist came out was, I think, really the right move.
You guys were fucking everywhere. You guys are still fucking everywhere. It's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to watch, because like being all the way over here, I don't hear everything right away. You know, like, I'm not that it annoys me or anything. It's part of the job. You know, I know I'm a 3 or 4 hour plane ride from them, whatever it is, you know, I'm not 20 minutes down the road. So I don't hear everything as it comes in, but then I see the end product, mm-hmm. not even knowing it was going to happen. And I'm like, holy crap. That's yep. crazy. Like all those, like the Kerrang and the Metal Hammer and all that stuff I read growing up as a kid and reading all my favorite bands in that those magazines. And then all of a sudden it gets announced that my name is in one of those magazines. And it was just like, that's pretty wild. Yeah.
100%. There was a tie-in question to this. I hope Aaliyah's not mad. It's about management. Cool. Just making sure. So how have you taken the experiences you've had with them into your management career, which I know is new,
mm-hmm.
but have you taken any lessons from that whole experience into your management
air quotes on new. I mean,
yeah, I mean, but I don't want him to go on downplaying it. So that's fine.
I appreciate it. But I mean, it's the first thing I can think of offhand is the press, like you were talking about, you know, like I think for up until, I guess, for whatever reason, this year, all I heard was about how, like, it just doesn't matter anymore. You know, like, it's not doing what it used to for bands. Like, why are you wasting your energy and your money trying to get into these sites that no one's going to read you on anyway, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's all I heard for years. And so I kind of just wrote it off and wasn't even paying attention to it for the past couple of years. And then it started happening for the Dow Boys, and it felt really good. That's plain and simple, you know, like, it felt really good. And I know it did a lot for us otherwise, but it's something I didn't think about when I was thinking about how press doesn't matter. It's just like how it affects an artist mentally, you know, to see yourself in a magazine that you grew up reading, like I said, or just seeing other people talk about it and care about it and share it, you know, it does a lot, I think, you know, a lot more than people realize or give it credit for. So that's something that I definitely pivoted on about a month ago. I was like, you know, I'm rolling out an album with another.
I hope we helped change your mind on that, Rich.
The podcast is definitely a huge part of that for sure.
We changed someone's mind. Fucking awesome.
It was a huge part of that. I was already starting to come around onto it, and then I saw Ryan Williams tweet about being on the podcast, and I was like, oh sweet, let me go check out that episode. And then I was looking through, you guys have hundreds and hundreds of episodes. So I was just like picking out people, either people I know that I want to hear from, like Ben Yumanov, or just someone that worked at a place that I thought would be interesting to hear from. And I, you know, you guys are in PR, so a lot of those people for me were people in PR, you know, like, because like I said, I kind of wrote it off for the past couple of years. So I was like, I need to hear what's actually going on and get back into it, into that world, and see what people are thinking about it. So yeah, it definitely helped me, the podcast, you know, it brought to light even more how important it actually is, for sure.
Cool. Now that you've fed our ego, I'm going to get back into the management questions here, but thank you for that. So which one's your favorite? No, I'm just kidding. In all seriousness, so you got two bands that you manage. Can you kind of go over who the bands are and just kind of go over who the bands are.
Sure. Yeah, Thought Crime is one of my bands. Not Thought, like thinking. That's a different band. Thought,
yep.
Like that old word that used to go around the internet all the time. I do know Thought Crime, though. Fantastic people and awesome band.
And it's easy to get confused with those two bands. I've done it in the past on Spotify. I like both bands.
Yeah, I was just talking to someone last week. You know Matt Bacon. I was just talking to him for a school assignment, actually, and I brought up Thought Crime, and I thought I said it thought enough, but I don't know if he thought that I was talking about Thought Crime or Thought.
Did I say it thought enough?
I'm confused already. I don't know what the listeners are thinking.
He goes, that band, but I have no idea if he knows he was talking about the band I manage or the other band. Anyway, so they're a cyber grind band, which the genre is not new, but there's kind of been a revival, I would say, in the past 3 or 4 years. And they've been a huge part of that. On Your Computer is past 100K streams not too long ago. And then they released Digital Drift in October. And that's about to hit 100,000 streams if it hasn't already. I was
really?
I was looking last week, and I just happened to look. I wasn't even looking for that. I got on their Spotify for Artists for something else, and I was like, wow, look at that.
That's insane. So,
yeah, that's really cool to see. October to April, and it's already at 100,000.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so they've done a really good job helping to support and grow that community as well. It's very huge online, the Cybergrind community. I think even
as
how,
makes sense.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
I didn't even know what Cybergrind meant until you brought up the word, and I'm like, oh, that band. Oh, I said, oh, yeah, I know them. Okay, that's Cyber.
Yeah, so like that combination of like electronic music and those kind of elements with death metal, hardcore, all the metal kind of stuff. It's very interesting. It's not even something that I was even that aware of before Thought Crime, you know? Yeah, it was cool. I actually happened to see them you know, the same kind of deal. Like, Dow Boys were friends with them, and so I was interacting with them on Twitter. And then we played in Philadelphia last June, and they were one of the opening bands. So it was really cool. I got to see them. Already was interested in them. They put on a fantastic show. And then later that year, or maybe early this year, So in the middle of last year, they were asking for if anyone knew someone who's looking to manage a band. So I was immediately like, oh, okay. Like, that's something I want to get into. That band is definitely a band that, needs it and can do well with it. And then a couple months later, they were still looking for a manager. And I was like, I'm just going to put my hat in the ring. And had a few conversations with them, and we all gelled. And now I'm managing them.
So now here comes the scary question. So how bad were you pissing your pants when you had to take them on, and when you felt like, because you already said that you felt like you were new. So this band is already signed to a label,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So what did you do? How did you kind of overcome that? And I know I would have been shitting myself.
Yeah, it was definitely daunting for sure. Yeah. It's like, this is not just messing around. Is not just like, oh, my friends have a band and people on Long Island like them, so I'm going to manage them. Like, this was the real deal.
Yeah.
So it was definitely daunting. It was definitely like Prosthetic is another label that I've been listening to bands from my entire life. Some of my favorite bands. And so I think Animals as Leaders is even still on that.
I think
label,
so too.
Right? Yeah. Well, insane. So it was definitely daunting. It was definitely like, it's like, I can't mess this up. their career's kind of in my hand right now. I can't mess this up. But I think it's just remembering how much experience I do actually have, and not just in management, but like life, being in bands in general. I think, and they thought it too. And having a manager like from the artist side is definitely helpful. I've seen bands like complain about like, well, my manager doesn't know anything about this because they've never sat in a van before. They've never even played a show before, So I think that made them a little more, and then it made it easier for them to bring me on, and as being such a newbie. But at the same time, I had to remember they are too, even though they are signed, that was their first label on Prosthetic, our first release on Prosthetic, and they're bigger than a brand new band like the other band I manage, but they're not huge. I'm not managing Animals as Leaders and trying to make all those connections from the ground up while those guys' careers are in my hand,
Yeah.
So I do. We're gonna grow together, And I just had to keep remembering that, But luckily, the guys at Prosthetic, everyone at Prosthetic has been really easy to work with. They were very accepting of the fact as soon as Thought Crime said, "Hey, this is Rich, our manager," they include me in every single email they send to Thought Crime and everything, So they've made it easy. And then I think it also just helps with my job, having a band that has this kind of clout is signed to a label like Prosthetic. It gets people's attention more, than just like, hey, here's this brand new band. Can you check them out? Can you book the show for us for this band that has never played a show before?
So. Speaking of which, you do have a band like that. So how did you get that one?
Yeah. So that, that band Trees on Mars, I'm still good friends with all of them, and their drummer is the drummer of Sometime in February, the other band that I manage. And I got laid off of my music instrument retail job in November. And, this is something that I've wanted to do for such a long time. I'm finishing up Berklee Online for music business, so it's just where I was going to end up anyway. And it kind of was a blessing in disguise, because I worked 10 to 6 answering the phones and the emails all day, and where's my pedal? My guitar pickup isn't working. And by the end of it, I'm like, okay, I'm going to make dinner, play saxophone, and go to bed. So it was very easy to just write off like not trying to get anything done in like the actual music business, But then that happened, and I was like, well, now's my chance, So I tweeted, you know, hey, looking for some bands to manage. If you know anyone who might be interested, let me know. And he was the first person. He hit me up almost right away. Like, hey, I don't know if you know, but I've been in this band with this guy, Tristan. We just recorded. We finished our debut LP. It's recorded with Jamie King, the guy who does Between the Buried Me's stuff. They talked to the label, a label. I guess maybe that's one of the things I should probably keep to myself. They talked to a label. The label said, we actually really like this. You know, it's fantastic music. You're just, you know, you've been a band since 2021 and it's 2022. You know, like you don't have much of a following. You haven't really played much shows. There's not much we can do with it, but we want you on our radar. You know, like we'll see what we can do after this release. And so with all that, I talked to him and I saw like a lot of myself in him and a lot of like that music. I'm going to make music happen drive no matter what. Saw all the things that he's doing to get his band, you know, where he wants to be headed and all that stuff. And I was like, I'm going to give this kid a chance. You know, like his music's really good. I'm not even that big of a fan of instrumental guitar music at this point in my life. It's been it's been quite a few years since I've even really listened. I think Animals as Leaders is the only band that I've kept up with for the past like 4 or 5 years, I'd say. But from the second I heard his music, I was like, well, I really like this. It's fantastic. You know, it's not what you would expect out of instrumental guitar rock and metal. You know, it's got a lot of math rock and post rock and even some like Midwest emo influence, you know. So I was like, I'm going to give this kid a shot. You know, I think he can make it. I want to help him. So like, that's why I want to be a manager. You know, I just want to see artists who I think deserve it get where they want to be, you know. And it would be cool to be in the ground floor of something like this, you know, like to help this guy grow and grow with him and, you know, not be 3 years down the road like, man, I wish I would have done something with that guy, you know. So
I love
giving
that
him a shot, and I think it'll work. Yeah,
cool. Aaliyah, do you got another question?
A couple questions. Which one should I ask first? I'm going to ask, we've gone over this on the podcast before, but can you maybe go over briefly what the roles of a band manager are? What's your responsibility as a band manager?
Sure. I think like almost everyone else has said, it's a little bit all over the place. I think especially in the position that I am now, like, and I think, you know, obviously a little more with some time in February, we don't have a budget to build a team, you know, like we're doing everything ourselves. I mean, outside of paying for designs and merch and people to make flyers. And so we don't have the budget to hire a PR team or a booking agent, you know? So it's just kind of like, I'm here to help him with basically whatever he needs, you know, like if he needs me to, all the social media ad videos that are made from the music videos were done by me. And I'm not necessarily saying that this is the role of a manager and then that 3 years down the road that I'm still going to be doing this for him. You know, I think like I was saying before, you kind of just got to be open to doing what you can, you know? But I think the overarching things that I'm doing for both are kind of like really just like project managing almost. I just took a project management class that ended Sunday, and it was huge. I put it off for so long, and I was like, you know, it's just an elective that I'm going to need to fill for some time down the road. And I think it was a good thing that I took it now, because it kind of like, I got to get my feet wet with the management, get that started. And then I took this class and I was like, wow, like this is really helpful. Like, this is basically what I'm doing, but like making it easier for me to do it, you know? So I've been doing a lot of like that, just like project managing, making sure. And that's what I've been doing a lot for Thought Crime is project managing, making sure what they want to get done is done, and not just like, yeah, we want to put out a single sometime this year, and then it's October and we never put out the single. you know.
No experience on this whatsoever, Rich. Nothing.
Yeah. Not yet. No. I'm sure no one's ever done that before. No. So yeah, that's a huge part of what I'm doing for both bands is making sure that things are planned, executed, and finalized, you know, like just making sure things are done. Because I know how easy it is, you know, like everyone's got a lot of things on their plate. You know, I want to make more content all the time. I constantly tell myself every day, hey, you're going to record 2 videos this week and put it out. But I don't even remember the last time I made a video. So, but yeah, it's because I'm busy with other stuff. But, you know, when an artist wants to be a working artist, you know, like that's what they got to do, make sure things get done. And I think that's a huge part of what I've been doing is just, you know, I have a project list sheet. I have tons and tons of spreadsheets. I feel like I make a new spreadsheet every week, and just making sure, tracking things and making sure they're getting done. And then what I found too is a lot of keeping their heads in the right place. You know, it's very easy when, like I was saying, when you're getting bogged down to just not feeling it, you know, or doomsdaying almost, you know, and like kind of spiraling. And it's like, and I'm being a little more detached. It's easier for me to be like, hey, like everything's going to be okay. Like we have options, we have backups, we have plans. Let's find a different way to do it. Or let's not do this. Let's do this instead. And it's already something that's happened. Yeah, pretty quickly into managing. We took one of my bands took a pretty big opportunity. We didn't get any info for a long time, and all of a sudden the show was announced and we still hadn't had any info. And when we did get info, we didn't like it at all. And
uh-oh.
Yeah. And we were like, you know what? And one of them was going to be traveling 3 or 4 hours, I think, at least probably around 3 or 4 hours to get to this show. And we were like, you know what? And the one who was traveling was like, you know, I'm starting to feel uncomfortable with this. I don't know if I want to do it. And I was like, then that's what we'll do. You know, like I'm not going to force you to do anything you don't want to do. And yeah, like let's just not take the opportunity, you know, like, well, there'll be other ones. We'll do something instead, or we'll spend that time doing something else, you know, or just not, you know, just don't want, I want my artist to be completely comfortable with what they're doing, you know? And yeah, so it's definitely something that I've been dealing with already too, for sure.
Is that project management class, was that part of your Berkeley business school?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How's that going? Is that like, I saw an ad for it and I was like, ooh, I kind of want to sign up for it. Would you recommend it?
Specific classes or the whole?
The music business program, yeah.
It's weird. I mean, I do kind of agree with what a lot of people say with when they say like it, you get out of it what you put into it. But at the same time, up until November, I was working 40 hours a week. I have a wife and a dog. I play saxophone. I play guitar. I'm in the Dow Boys. I'm artist managing. I have my own, you know, I was playing prog metal for 8 years and I want to get back into that. I have 3 songs written, almost ready to go. And I feel like they just don't care about part-time students, really. You know, it's like,
fair.
It's like everything is set up for people whose entire like effort is going to school, you know, like it's not made for people who are squeezing in what they can when they have time, you know, like
fair.
Even for that project management class, they wanted me to do group assignments for like 3 or 4 weeks. But like, and also they wanted me to project lead, you know, be the project leader of a group and then participate in 2 other groups' projects as a participant.
And that sounds like, complicated.
Yeah. I was like, I don't have time for that at all. At all. Like, not at all. Like I barely have time. I have the time I have to get my work done. I don't have the time to coordinate around everyone else's, you know? So that was my only thing. That, and I feel they are definitely, the reason I went to Berkeley in the first place is because I figured they would be the cutting edge of music and music business. I think at least 99% of the courses that I took are at least 5 years old.
Okay.
And are just not very updated. Like they talk about things on platforms like Twitter. They talk at that haven't been a feature for 4 or 5 years. They don't talk about Apple Music. They talk about iTunes. It's outdated somehow. Like there's things that I learn obviously that are gonna always apply, but I feel like I could get even a little bit better education just doing research on more relevant on how these topics apply to how the music business is today versus even 2 months ago. You know?
Yeah, it changes so quickly. You know, there's always like a new social media platform that's like taken
TikTok
off.
TikTok is not mentioned once, I don't think, in any of my classes.
And I mean,
that's is MySpace?
Huge.
Yes.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh no.
Absolutely.
I don't
as
know if we're gonna have, are we gonna have to edit
still
this out, Curtis?
A current platform. So that's my like.
We don't have to edit this out. I don't think
it is what it is. I definitely I've taken a lot of great classes. But yeah, there's definitely times where I'm like,
sure.
I've learned more just from being, from you know being out there in the past couple months than this class has taught me. Because yeah, like you said, this business is insane. It changes every day. You know, like there's no way a class from 5 years ago is going to be as relevant as it needs to be. You know, so that's the thing.
But at the same time, there are always principles that you can pull and project them into what's going on today. Mm-hmm. So it's just the key is like searching for those and, you know, deciding whether that's something that's worth that degree or if it's something you want to explore kind of on your own independently.
Yeah, exactly. I think worth the degree, I think, is a huge thing because the reason I even started is because that's what everyone tells you, you know, you need to get a degree, you need to get a degree, you need to get a degree. When I was graduating high school, it was like, well, you want to do music, you could either be a music teacher or you can get a performance degree and not earn money ever in your life.
You know what I want to say really quick? Because I think it's a misconception. I was told by my parents, who I love, that becoming a professional musician is like becoming a player in the NBA. And it's that rare to be able to be a professional musician. Exactly. And it's not the same thing.
Yeah. I think I don't think I would have ended up going to school for performance. But yeah, it's definitely not like that at all. You can definitely make a living. And I think, I think a huge part of it is they don't understand that like
those kind of
people have multiple income streams too. You know, they're not just in one band hoping that one band breaks big.
Right, right.
Those kind of people are playing for multiple bands, multiple times a week, maybe even multiple times a night, like just raking in money like that, you know? And so that's what I was, you know, the same thing. Love my parents to death, but that's what they told me. That's what my guidance counselors told me is it's either teach or die a starving artist, you know? No one told me for 1 second that the music business was a thing. I didn't realize that that was something I can go to school and get into, you know? I didn't even know it was something that I wanted to get into until I went to school for music ed for my first year. It didn't work out. I got back home. I joined a band. They didn't have anyone doing anything as for, you know, management or anything like that. They were just guys playing music in a room hoping someone offered them some shows, you know? So I joined the band and I was like, can I do it then? Like, I think that would be cool. Like I'll book the shows. I'll run social media. I'll send those emails. I'll get, you know, I'll get us going. And they were like, yeah, sure. And obviously turned out I loved it. that's what I'm doing, you know? So, but like, yeah, that's the thing. Like they don't. And then, so that's what I was saying. Like it didn't work out with music ed. So I didn't have a degree. And then after I decided, well, this is what I want to do with my life. This is awesome. I love being in the music. I love being in the business side. I love managing my bands. This is what I want to do. I'm still told, well, you have to get a degree. You're not going to get a job unless you have a degree.
I am living proof that is not the case.
That's the
thing. Well, but you started your own business, Curtis.
But the point is, I have no degree. I have no experience in this.
You just went out there and did it, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
That's the thing.
A lot of days I wish that I... And, you know, if people ask me my advice, should I go to school or should I just go do it? I would probably say just go do it.
The main thing is networking.
Right.
I would say especially in the music industry.
Yeah. Getting out there, doing the jobs, doing multiple jobs, seeing what you like and what you're good at. But then while you're doing that, that's networking while you're doing those things. And you're you're growing your network for where you want to get to, you know? Yeah. I don't feel like I was necessarily behind on that just because I was playing in bands since 2010. But I kind of feel like I was a little bit behind that on like industry contacts. You know, I have all these bands, all these friends and all these bands, and I feel better about it now. I have a good amount of industry contacts that I feel more comfortable, but 2 or 3 years ago, even I was like, yeah, all I know are other artists, you know, I don't know very much business people, you know? So I think that's a huge reason why you should just do it, is that you're immediately meeting people who are doing it. You know, you're not a cursory person to these people who you might get to meet. You know, you're meeting people who are doing it every day, you know?
100% agree.
So it's a big weighing thing, but in my personal opinion, if I could go back to 2017, I would tell myself, nope, go find a job at a venue, go find some guys, some kids in a band who want a manager, just do something, start and get yourself in there, you know, and work to where you want to be.
And probably for free for a while.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a huge part of it for me now is, you know, I also want to be, I, you know, artist management is where I want to be full time eventually, I'd say. But right now that's not going to be how I'm making my living. You know, it's just not physically possible. So I am looking for something in the industry, but, it's a little bit like starting at ground zero, you know, like I'm going to have to either find someone who's going to give me a chance for a good amount of money so that I can take the job and pay my bills, or I'm going to have to just somehow make it work with a job that's not going to give me enough money, you know, and get my foot in the door that way. So I feel like, yeah, if you're 23, if you're 23, 25, and you don't have bills to pay much, you know, maybe you got your car insurance and your phone or something, go just, even if they're not paying you right away, just take the job, get the experience, get the networking, you know.
I did all this when I was 33, so.
And I did it too, and I worked at the record label, so.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
So yeah, I've turned 31 on Friday, so.
There you go.
Yeah, that's where I'm at now. It's just
awesome. Well, happy early birthday. It'll be after your birthday when this is published. But
oh, Sunday, this past Sunday.
Oh. Well, then happy late birthday.
Happy late birthday. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of feel like I'm in the same place right now. You know, it's like I gotta just find someone that'll give me a chance, you know, and work my way through, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not upset about it. I've had my fun, you know, I have a lot of experience. I feel like when I do get that job, I'm going to feel good and confident about it, you know? But I think if you have the advantage to start when you're young, just do it, you know, get the wheel going, you know, just do it.
Good points. Good points. That's all we have time for.
Dang it. Never mind.
You have more time if you want to ask that question. It's fine.
Aaliyah's probably starving, so I'm not going to keep going.
I'm getting a little bit of a headache from not having dinner yet, but go ahead and ask the question, Curtis.
My question is McDonald's or Wendy's now, because I'm not going to ask the original question because it's going to take too long. So McDonald's or Wendy's?
I lean towards Wendy's. I like their fries better.
Cool. Fair. Cool.
Thank you so much again for coming on the podcast. Everyone listening, I hope you learned something. I know I did. And until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
Thanks for having me, y'all.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by following or subscribing to us, recommending it to your friends, or leaving us a review on your platform of choice. Thank you for listening to Heavy Business, brought to you by C-Squared Music.